This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
It is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. I am Field Yates in for Alan Hahn. He, of course, is Bart Scott. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. And Bart, you, of course, call New York home. And New York has been at the epicenter of the NBA offseason in recent weeks because not only has Kevin Durant requested a trade from the Nets, but Donovan Mitchell has been rumored to be a top target of the Knicks as the Jazz continue with their retooling. So we're going to get into the latest involving the Nets as late last night, Woj, Cortejo Wojnarowski, ESPN NBA insider, broke the news that the Celtics are now in the mix for Kevin Durant. Here's a listen from Woj earlier today about how this all came to be.
Like everyone else, they called Brooklyn once it was revealed that Kevin Durant had asked for a trade back on June 30th. And, you know, I think like other teams who look at their makeup, where they are in terms of their championship pursuit, and do we have the assets that might interest Brooklyn? And it could bring in Kevin Durant and put us over the top? I think the answers for the Celtics on all those questions are yes. But of course, at what cost, what price for Boston?
So the Celtics are now on the radar at the very least, Bart. And according to our own Mark Jackson, the Celtics are doing what really every NBA team should do, as he explained on KJM this morning.
I believe 29 teams should be going after Kevin Durant. He's that great of a player. So to me, it's not a shock when another team is thrown in there trying to steal him away from the Brooklyn Nets. He's an incredible all-time great talent. Obviously, he's a home run hitter. When it matters most, a guy you can get the basketball to, and he can carry you. So I think that every team should be on the phone putting forth their best package possible to get Kevin Durant in their uniform.
We've been talking about this all show, Bart, and you believe that a package centered around Jaylen Brown plus some other stuff would actually be a win for the Brooklyn Nets.
I believe so. I mean, because I think no other package that we've heard, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero,
come on,
Bridges.
I love that. You know, you love these packages the teams present?
Yeah, sure. Here you go. Like, why would I want that?
Right here. Give me $100 and I'll give you $52 back.
Exactly.
Like, do these teams not think the Brooklyn Nets know what they're doing?
And I mean, well, we've seen this organization get fleeced before when you think about the Kevin Garnett in the
Paul Pierce trade,
right? It took him how many years to recover from that? This one, moving on from some great players still in their prime, can offer bringing back a softer landing for them and trying to get, you know, you're never going to get proper compensation back, right? Because everybody knows once he decides or a star player decides to be traded, he's going to do whatever he can within his power to be traded, and that usually, you know, leans itself to them being traded, right? We saw James Harden, right? We saw Anthony Davis. So the best you can get back, you know, they got Kyle Kuzman back. I mean, Brandon Ingram ended up becoming a great return on investment, but Julius Randle's no longer there. They moved on from him. If you can get a guy like Jaylen Brown that's in his prime, a guy that showed up, who has experience and been in a winning culture, and then get a guy like Marcus Smart in return, you've already gotten, you know, their backcourt from last year that took the Boston Celtics to the championship. You know, so you already have two great building pieces, and you have Ben Simmons, who we haven't seen. So that's a decent big three right there. And if you get a bunch of picks, then you're in position to get one of these once in a generation type of players that's coming out. You could possibly be in the bidding if you have enough pieces to move up and maybe trade a player to get the kid that the Spurs are waiting for. Everybody's tanking for this 7-4.
Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah. So could you imagine if you turn him into Kevin Durant to him later, and you still got Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Ben Simmons?
It seems to me like the Celtics are one of those few teams that can piece together a realistic enough package. And I don't mean realistic enough to only tempt Brooklyn, but also to tempt themselves. Here's what I mean by that is everybody keeps connecting Toronto to Brooklyn in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. And part of the reason why is that Toronto has Scottie Barnes, the NBA's Rookie of the Year this past season, and a guy who has the look of a future superstar in this league. The problem is that I get the sense, I think we all get the sense, that Toronto has zero interest in playing the Scotty Barnes card. He's 20 years old. He's got, obviously, the entirety of his rookie contract besides this past year ahead of him. He could legit be a 15-year building block for your organization. The Celtics, meanwhile, like, I'm a huge fan of Jaylen Brown. As a matter of fact, like, this would be, in some ways, disappointing for the Celtics to move on from Jaylen. Like, maybe in many ways. At the same time, you've already been close enough to the precipice of a championship with Jaylen Brown as one of your two best players to know that the difference between being back there next year when the East figures to be even more competitive with the Bucks healthy and the Sixers reshaped, and we'll see what happens with Miami and replacing PJ Tucker, but they were the number one seed this past year, that it's not going to be easy to get back to the finals, even with the Celtics' improved roster. However, if you had Kevin Durant, if you had the option for just next year, and I know that's not what this is about, but just next year to have Kevin Durant or, let's say, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, I think some people would make the case that the Celtics would prefer Kevin Durant over those two players for next year. There's a lot more that goes into it, but if you're Boston, how willing would you be or should you be to make this trade?
I mean, for me, I think Marcus Smart is a luxury piece. Remember, him and Brad Stevens didn't have the greatest relationship, and now he's the general manager.
He's calling the shots, yeah.
And then you look at the fact that, I mean, you brought in Malcolm Brogdon, right? So because you felt like you needed a true point guard, and I think Marcus Smart disagreed because he talked about the celebrity or the superstar point guards not really getting the team to the promised land. When you think about Kemba Walker, you think about Kyrie Irving. So, like, you can be able to digest that if you're bringing back a player like Kevin Durant and you're able to just, you know, have Malcolm Brogdon be your point guard. And if, you know, he breaks down, that of course that's a problem, but that's the risk you take. No risk, no reward, right? And when you think about bringing in a guy like that that's arguably a top three player and pairing him with another guy that we feel is a top 10 player, Jason Tatum, he also can help him mature a little bit. He can be his flash to LeBron James, teaching him how winning is done and how to win in situational basketball moments, because he fell short. He fell short because he succumbed to the pressure, and Jaylen Brown played well because he didn't have any pressure because all the pressure was on Jason Tatum, so he was able to play free. So let all the pressure be on Kevin Durant because he's built for this. He can handle it. He's done it over and over his entire career, and then let Jason Tatum ease his way into being the superstar, and then, you know, we'll be talking about him if he wins the championship and he has the same numbers that Jaylen Brown had and they win a championship. We'll be talking about him as, oh, he's arrived, right? He's a top five player, you know, and then it'll all be because Kevin Durant took the pressure off of him.
We're going to talk football in just a moment. Let's go to the phone lines just quickly to hear from Ronald in Florida, who thinks this whole trade concept is ridiculous. What do you got, Ronald?
Oh, dude, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. There's no way, if I'm Boston, I give up Jaylen Brown for KD. First of all, dude, like Bart just said, you're talking Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. That's the backcourt that just took you to the finals, dude. Jaylen Brown showed up bigger than anybody. Jaylen Brown and Al Horford, they showed up huge, dude. If I'm Boston and I have to make a trade, it's crazy, dude, but I'm just going KD for Tatum straight up, dude. Just straight up. Tatum for KD.
Ronald's an interesting thought, and thanks for the call. Bart, I got to tell you, I would guess that unless it was like Giannis or Luka who was going back to Boston, yeah, there's no way the Celtics are trading Jason Tatum, right? Like,
yeah, but it's nobody that's still also you go one for one. So you try and get, you know, you try and get your second best or your 1B. And then, you know, pairing with somebody for Kevin Durant.
Ooh, man. It would be such a fascinating trade if it does go down, in part because, as we've already referenced, the Celtics were the team that traded their veteran stars that were aging and past their prime to the New Jersey Nets at the time, which became the Brooklyn Nets, and sort of catalyzed the turnaround for the Boston Celtics, which led to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown being drafted by that team, both of them going third overall. Here we are all these years later, and there are rumors that Jaylen Brown could be on the move with Kevin Durant coming back to Boston. All right, we're going to talk some football. We have to talk to one of our analysts, and we'll tell you about Tim Hasselbeck's thoughts in just a moment, but a reminder that ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to team up with Hello Alice to support small business. Get access to small business resources and learn about small business grants at HelloAlice.com. Tim is going to join us in just a little bit here as we go back to football. Bart, do you have the football itch yet? Like, if you were actually, let me ask you this. Today is not quite the first day of NFL training camps. All teams are back in camp officially by tomorrow. Some are already there. At the end of your career, I'm not even going to ask you how much you liked training camp. How much did you hate training camp? Because I know no veterans love going back when it's hot and sticky and their kids, you know, some players have to leave their kids if they have kids back home. Like, that ain't fun.
Yeah, back in the day, it was a little cooler, though, because we were up in Cortland. So Cortland was like Syracuse. It was always cool. So like it was almost when we had to come back and play games. We're like, man, it's hot as hell out here.
Yeah.
Because like being up in Cortland was like being at in San Francisco. It's like, oh man, you might go outside. Oh, it's a little chilly. Let me put a hoodie on. You know what I mean? But now with this global warming, oh, sticky hot. You can't go away. You can't run away from nowhere where you're at. Oh man, it was tough. You know what I mean? But you know, the good thing is if you're a veteran, you get vet days and you watch a young guy scrap it out and battle it out.
It is sort of, it does make me laugh. When I was working in the league, I worked in scouting, and part of my time was with the Kansas City Chiefs. And we used to have training camp up in River Falls, Wisconsin. And I'm telling you, Bart, I'd get up in the morning for our first practice of the day. And we'd be in like sweatpants and sweatshirts. Yeah. It was so cold, right? It didn't even feel like training camp. Then training camp got moved to Northwest Missouri in St. Joseph's, and it was like 120 every day.
Yeah.
So, time now for us to welcome our friend, ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, into the mix. And Tim, at the end of your career, how did you feel about going to training camp, as I was just asking Bart about?
Oh, my gosh. My biggest fear was like, okay, how do you... Like, how am I going to make it through without getting hurt? That's all I used to think about. Like, how am I going to do this and not get injured? But I will say, like, there were a few stages. I think Bart might be able to attest to this. There were some guys, and I won't admit if I was one or not, that would, if you had young kids at the time and field as a parent of a little one, knowing that you actually were going to get some uninterrupted sleep through the night, like that was like one of the bright spots. I'm just going to just be real. That was one of the bright spots.
Hey, you know, it's funny. You know, I was with Brian Billick, and it was Camp Cream Puff, right? It was called Camp Cream Puff. So if you're a veteran, you're able to actually go home after the first day. Some guys like, no, don't tell my wife that. yeah, I go be in camp. You going home to the honeydew list?
I didn't get that memo. So Tim, we are. Go ahead, Tim. Sorry about that.
No, listen, Bart's exactly right. When some of those teams started doing that, some guys are like, well, "Hold up, wait a minute! Like all the veterans are allowed to do that? Are you sure?"
Wife start talking. You're like, no, hold up, yeah, baby, I got to stay because I got to get treatment throughout the night because I'm injured. I hurt tweaked my toe. I tore my cuticle yesterday in practice.
I can already see the NFLPA and the veterans on the NFLPA negotiating this into the next CBA. Veterans automatically sleep at home at all training camps, assuming they are done at the team's local facility.
Players might strike if that happens. Like, no. We're gonna fight against that.
Yeah. Tim, I don't know what it is about Lamar Jackson specifically, but it feels like every time he's brought up, it's like in a very polarizing fashion. Today, Mike Sando, our former colleague here at ESPN and now works at The Athletic, released his Tears piece. He does it every year. It's a great column. He polls the minds of many around the league, and quarterbacks are voted into tears. And there was a quote from someone, a defensive coordinator, that said, "I don't care if Lamar Jackson wins 12 Super Bowls. He'll never be a one for me," meaning a tier one quarterback at the very top. I get it that Lamar is different than almost every quarterback that's played in this league. He's like 10 times the athlete as like the next closest athlete as far as quarterbacks go. But does it need to be this difficult when it comes to discussing Lamar Jackson?
No, I don't think so. Like, and I certainly am not. Like, that comment that you read, Field, like, it's impossible to defend that comment because truthfully, like if a guy wins 12 MVPs or 12 Super Bowls or something like that, like, you know, I don't care if he, you know, throws the ball with his feet. Like the reality is like like, at that point, you're just like, look, you're as good as anybody that's ever done it. Your way might be different, but it's better than anyone's ever done it. Like, so, like, to me, that's an indefensible comment. Now, I do think what happens, you know, when people look at Lamar, and listen, I'll just be, like, being real. Like, I'm one of these guys. This is a passing league, okay? He's thrown for over 3,000 yards in a season one time. And I'm not saying yards, you know, dictate what type of quarterback somebody is. But I still believe that to have long sustained success in the NFL, like, I'm not talking about a year or 3 years or even 5 years. I'm saying if you're going to be a decade long starter, I do think that you need to be a better passer than he is. And that would be the apprehension. I think some people take a lot of offense to that. Doesn't mean he's not a great player right now. Doesn't mean he's not a great football player. Doesn't mean he's not a great quarterback. But I just think, like, if you're going to compare him to somebody like Josh Allen Field, like, I think there's a significant difference between the two and in favor of Josh Allen.
It's one of those things, in my opinion, Tim, is that can he do it, or has he not had the opportunity to do it? And, you know, when I think about Josh Allen, I think about Justin Herbert, who we would think are good, you know, dual threat quarterbacks. Yep. I look at what they did for him, for both of those guys, right? Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, right? I think about Stephon Diggs, Gabriel. I think going out and getting James and Crowder. And when I look at what the Baltimore Ravens has surrounded Lamar Jackson with, he doesn't have his guy. Even though Hollywood Brown, he had 1,000 yards, you know, receiving last year, he's not that guy. He's arguably not a number one. So when does Lamar Jackson get that number one receiver where we can say, look at the guys that he can throw, that he throws the ball to, and then I feel like I can do a true assessment? Because I think, like, you know, he was on his way last year to trying to prove that he can win from the pocket, but guys weren't healthy. He lost all his running backs, and he had to become the run game. And he was carrying that football team, doing it by any means necessary, account for probably like 80% of their total offense. But he, you know, Bateman was a young rookie. He didn't have he wasn't polished. You know, Sammy Watkins is always hurt. Hollywood Brown, is his hands are inconsistent. So I'm looking, when does he get his DeAndre Hopkins? When does he get his Davante Adams? When does he get that guy? I mean, I understand Mark Andrews is great, but that's down the hashes. That's not an outside threat, outside the numbers threat. That's not a Jamar Chase. He's not had anybody that we can consider as a wide receiver that we would think is in the top 15 in receivers in his league.
Yeah, but look, no matter how good you are at quarterback and how much you make the guys around you better, which, you know, all the great quarterbacks, that, like, that's what they do. They make players around them better. Like, it still is a dependent position. So, you know, look, we were talking a few years ago about the lack of talent around Tom Brady in New England, and we're wondering, you know, how much Aaron Rodgers can survive with no Davante Adams, and some of these guys around him aren't going to be there. Like, so I think it's always fair, you know, to ask that question. The thing that I would say is this, from you know, watching Lamar as a passer in the pocket and known passing situations, look, he's just not as developed as a pure passer as other quarterbacks. He's not. Now, he's a significantly better runner than most.
Right.
But, like, look, that's one of the reasons I thought Kyler Murray was such an amazing prospect, is I was like, wow. Like, he oftentimes is the fastest guy in the field, but he came into the league as a really developed passer.
Right.
And Lamar just didn't come into the league that way. So can he turn into the type of passer Kyler Murray is or Josh Allen is? Maybe he can, but he's not that right now. He just is not. And I think the challenge ends up being is, do you try to develop that as you're trying to win games, or do you kind of just let him do what he does really well?
Tim, last year, not a whole lot went right for the Jaguars. I think all of us could admit it was sort of a disaster set of circumstances. So how much, if any, are you able to take away from what you saw from Trevor Lawrence last year? And what is your level of confidence that Trevor Lawrence can be whatever caliber of prospect you thought he was coming out of Clemson?
Yeah, I think you can take a lot from it last year, but I also think, and I think this is what you're getting at, I think you have to throw a lot of it away because of what last year was and basically feel like,
All right. Well, we may have lost.
But I think you can take from it. Look, there are plays. There are some plays where, like, his good is as good as anything you can do, you know, where you're like, wow, that's the prospect we thought. Now, he had some head-scratching, really bad decisions that were out of character from the stuff he did in college, and I think that has something to do with environment around him and feeling like he's got to make everything right. And then I think also with the environment around him, I don't think guys around him played all that great. So I expect a significant improvement. Just because I think he's really that talented. I think he'll be coached better. I think the guys around him will be coached better. And I think that he's had the benefit now of a year of speed of the game, making some mistakes and learning from them. So, look, the Colts are going to win that division in my estimation. I think Jacksonville's got a long way to go, but I think that we see a significant improvement.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, well, he is Tim Hasselbeck, our great ESPN NFL analyst. We appreciate you, Tim. We can probably watch you. I've already seen you on like 9 different shows this morning, which probably means you have about 13 more for the rest of the day. But Tim Hasselbeck, always a great time to talk football with you. We will talk to you again soon here on Bart and Han. All right.
Sure, so.
I think the Trevor Lawrence is a fascinating year two prospect because Tim's right. There was some good right there that we saw last year. I'll say this, Bart, and you know these are the kind of things that you say them early, and you fear that they could come back to bite you in the rear. But like some of the coaches that I've talked to that faced off against Trevor Lawrence last year, like in the game and like the prep leading up to it, were like, yeah, it looks all right. Like, not like, hey, this is the best prospect in a decade, but more like, hey, he looks all right. So I think that this year will be a very instructive year, not just for the Jaguars, but probably for the rest of the league as well, because a guy who came with that kind of billing, you expected him to be the man right away.
Yeah, we expected him to be Andrew Luck, to take an organization that was struggling and raise them up to relevancy. But, you know, the environment was bad.
It was bad. It did not work out anywhere close to at all for the Jaguars, which is why they picked number one overall for the second straight year. That's not something you want to do. We could probably have a whole conversation on the show about which team is most likely to pick number one overall this upcoming year. I don't think the Jaguars are that team. They spent more money in free agency than any team in the history of the NFL when you are looking at guaranteed money spent. So not to confuse activity with achievement, but this roster looks a lot better on paper, and Doug Peterson should be a pretty dramatic upgrade in terms of coaches. All right, so Shohei Ohtani is the must-see attraction in baseball this year. Dominant pitcher, a dominant hitter as well. But could he really be on the move via a trade? There's no way the Angels could do that. Could they? We'll tell you next. This is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bart and Han.
Here's Ohtani blasting one to dead center field. That one's got to be in the 450 range or so.
wish sports fans understood the ridiculousness of what Ohtani's doing right now.
We're back on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Field Yates in for Alan Hahn. He is, of course, Bart Scott. And a reminder that ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can get involved with the show by dialing in to 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Jeff Passan does an incredible job covering the MLB for us here. Recently spoke about the possibility of something, Bart, that I wouldn't have believed was even possible. And that's the idea of Shohei Ohtani, the unicorn in the MLB, being on the trading block.
You got to entertain the possibility of trading him. But if you do trade Shohei Ohtani, what's Mike Trout going to think? Is Mike Trout going to want to stick around in Los Angeles? Is he going to want to be an Angel long term when they can't even keep the best player potentially in history around or choose to get rid of him? I'm not going to say it's a catch-22, because anytime you have a guy as talented as Ohtani is, you're in a great position. But man, for being in such a great position, the Angels have a tough decision to make. And if he doesn't move by August 2nd, at very least, they need to consider the possibility of him being traded this winter.
All right, Bart. So just for those that may be asking this question, how much longer is Shohei Ohtani under contract, which is always part of the calculation, he is signed through 2023, at which point he would become a free agent. When you think of baseball right now, I would imagine Aaron Judge and the Yankees near the top of the list, but Shohei Ohtani has to be right in the middle of that conversation as well, right?
No, absolutely. But, you know, to listening to the comments, what would Mike Trout think because they got rid of the best player in baseball? Well, you were the reigning best player in baseball before that.
Yep.
And what has that gotten them? So they need to trade him to try and get some assets to start over from scratch with a young team that they can build around, because Shohei Ohtani is going to break the bank. If Mike Trout's worth, they potentially have two of the highest contracts in the history of baseball on the same team, and they can't, two stars ain't enough. They need depth. They need to be able to get enough talent around to build a baseball team. They need to go talk to the Rays or talk to the Athletics to learn how
Moneyball, baby.
Learn how to ball on a budget, man, because these dudes are crazy. They paid Pujols to come over there, got him nowhere. They paid Josh Hamilton, I believe, to come over there.
Justin Upton, Mike Trout.
Who's the guy from the Washington Nationals?
Anthony Rendon.
Still does nothing. It's not this team is not able to spend. Is that they can't find a manager to manage the talent that they have. And Mike Trout, being the best player in baseball, have yielded them no playoff appearances, no deep runs. You look at the teams that's just in California right there, they're the worst of them all.
Yeah, it's too bad, because the reality is that if Shohei Ohtani were playing on either a more competitive team or just in a different market, a larger market, Anaheim, I know they're the Los Angeles Angels, but they are the other team in Los Angeles, right? They do not play.
They're not even the Clippers.
They're not even the Clippers. That's correct. If he was playing in New York, if he was playing in Chicago, Boston, you name it, right? Some of these huge cities.
Yeah.
We will be talking about this player even more than we already are. If the Angels were to trade for him, right, or trade him away right now, this would not be selling high, Bart. This would be selling from like the top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Exactly.
That's where his value is at right now. And I think if you're the Angels, as amazing as Shohei Ohtani is, you have evidence in the time that you've had him on your roster that having great Shohei Ohtani with great Mike Trout is not anywhere close to enough, right? Like,
yeah, I'm trading them both.
Yeah, and I get that Trout would be different for a couple of reasons. One is that he has the opportunity. He's got a no-trade movement. Like, he has the ability to basically say, if I'm going anywhere, I'm basically dictating where I am going.
That's fine.
His contract's much bigger right now. But man alive, if I am the Angels and I have to, like, it is simultaneously.
We tried it.
It's simultaneously a reasonable thing to explore and also an incredibly depressing thing. Like, the idea that you could have two unicorns on your roster in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and be nowhere close to the playoffs, like, that's an organizational failure at the highest levels.
Yeah.
This sport is, you know, it's not that it's ever been about just one or two players.
Yeah.
We've seen, you know, A-Rod before he was a Yankee, you know, those years in both Seattle and Texas, it wasn't like they were consistently competing for the World Series. There are many, many examples of this. But to not have a more competitive product on the field right now is just an embarrassment if you're the Los Angeles Angels. Something that might seem ridiculously blasphemous might actually be in play.
So could you imagine the two best players in baseball on the market? What you can build, the foundations, the prospects you can get for teams that are ready to win now. I mean, okay, he has, Mike Trout, where do you want to go? Because, listen, it's going to get ugly. And if you care about winning, if you care about your legacy, if not, you can stay here and be involved in it. But Shohei's out of here because he don't have no trade clause, right? And you're on the way out, or you're just going to sit here and suffer, and you can collect your money, but you ain't going to like it until eventually you're going to say, you know what, get me up out of here, and I'm going to get a haul for you.
By the way, Juan Soto, a 23-year-old, is also available for trade right now because he recently turned down a $450 million extension offer from the Washington Nationals. Crazy times right now in MLB. A reminder, the trade deadline is August 2nd. Keep your Twitter notifications for Jeff Passan and Buster Olney and others on as we continue our coverage here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, your calls, and could anyone actually stop Aaron Judge? Because the man is on fire coming off of the All-Star break. This is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
I'm live from L.A., home of 7 professional teams and the Clippers.
Bart and Hahn.
Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio. Field Yates filling in for Alan Hahn. Of course, Bart Scott here. And Bart, we were just talking about Shohei Ohtani and whether or not the Angels should consider trading him at the apex of his value. Mike in Los Angeles has thoughts on a potential Ohtani trade. What do you got, Mike?
Yeah, hi there. I love the show, guys, and thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to say that as a diehard Angels fan for the past, you know, few decades, I've seen this team in its glory days back in 2002 when they won the World Series. And we've been hitting rock bottom, really hard times, ever since the phenomenal Mike Trout came to its Angel existence. And we have only reached the playoff once. And that is a complete failure all the way to the top. And when I say top, I'm talking about ownership. And Artie Moreno, you know, he has a reputation of just going after and getting a player in his heydays, past his prime, giving him a boatload of money. And so, you know, the GMs, we always have big turnover, a lot of turnover in GMs and coaches. And frankly, we just have to point the finger to Artie Moreno, the owner. And I hope that he ends up selling the team to a different owner that really cares about rebuilding it from its grassroots. And I'm talking about the farm, you know, just AAA, getting better player development there. Because when we look at our bigger brother in the Dodgers up north, in the 5 freeway, that you know, they seem to have a great farm system. They never rebuild; they just reload whenever they have somebody in the DL. We always try, you know, we always have this hype every single, you know, preseason, talking about, okay, this is going to be our year, and we just fall flat. And yeah, we have some injuries, Anthony Rendon and so forth, but all of a sudden, you know, we got to look ourselves in the mirror because of the talent pool that we have, and we're not doing much with it. I blame it squarely on the owner, Artie Moreno. And this is coming from a loyal Angels fan. Again, I've suffered with a lot of these loyal Angels that show up to the stadium and root for Shohei Ohtani, the unicorn. I hate for him to go and be, wearing a different uniform, but my heart says, Shohei, run.
Yeah. A lot to digest there,
Mike. Join the ball club. That's going to get you go for that ring, my brother. Yeah. Go for it, and we won't blame you.
We won't blame him. That's right. Mike, I felt like I just sat there at a Los Angeles Angels town hall, and you were speaking for the fans, the fan base that feels as though these players deserve better. Your expectations are realistic. Your passion is apparent. We're coming back in just a few moments back on the other side on the radio dial.
Bart and Hahn.
Bart Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Field Yates, filling in for Alan Hahn. He is Bart Scott. And Bart, you played in this, amongst the markets you played in, where it was New York. You know that the spotlight shines brighter on New York athletes than basically anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's during bad times and good. If you're in a slump, not the place you want to be. If you're on a heater, it is the place you want to be. You think about some of the phenomenons that have taken over New York.
Insanity.
And now, I'm not sure what we can call it to describe how Aaron Judge has played.
All rise.
Because Aaron Judge, who seemingly could not be stopped in the first half before the All-Star break of this season, is even better coming out of the gates. It's like every time I turn in the six games the Yankees have played since the All-Star break, another home run for Aaron Judge. The Yankees made an offer to Aaron Judge that they publicly revealed, by the way.
Yep, trying to put pressure on him.
That he declined prior to the season. I am not one to say that, generally speaking, turning down whatever it is, $325 million, is a guarantee to be a good business move.
Yep.
But Aaron Judge's decision is looking like one of the smartest business decisions in sports that I can recall.
Since Joe Flacco
betting on himself, winning a Super Bowl in a Super Bowl MVP, signing a contract for $126 million, Aaron Judge can't be stopped. If the Yankees are going to keep Aaron Judge beyond this season, and the number he turned down was $325 million before the year, what does that number represent now to keep him around? Is it $450? Is it $500 million?
Nah,
how do you keep Aaron Judge?
Well, I think the number, the sweet spot is $40 million a year. I think that's what he wants. And
okay.
I think he wants it to be like a, you know, anywhere from 9 to 10 year deal, maybe with an option in there. The same thing that kind of A-Rod signed a couple years ago. I think his was 10 for $275, right?
Yep.
So I mean, you look at Aaron Judge, the same age, 30 years old, still hitting his prime. Who's to say that okay, well, for the next 6 years, he will be the one of the most dominant, you know, players. You look at athletes; they last longer now. You look at what Terrific Tom is doing. You look at what Whitworth did as a left tackle at 40 years old.
Yeah.
And you're saying, okay, well, if we going to trust that he can stay healthy, and that's what I think he's trying to prove, that he can stay healthy for an entire year, and that he can keep, you know, batting. We know he's an outstanding outfielder. We know that he's one of the best sluggers in all of the game, and who gets robbed a lot of times because the strike zone is hard to manage. But he's also a great person on and off the field. He's great to be your CEO, the face of your franchise, because he says and does all the right things off the diamond as well. So that's that and for the Yankees, shame on them. And not saying that $28 million is something to sneeze at. Man, Kyler Murray just got $40 million a year.
Right.
Like, I mean, Aaron Judge should be more important to the Yankees than Kyler Murray is to the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, you talk about, you know, them having his control, and he's 30, and they haven't had to pay him. His first 4 years, he was making $500,000. He's making six digits. And he still was one of the best players in the league. So, like, that's something that the CBA has correct, that these owners can hold control of these players. And then when they get – and then when they perform and prove they're worth it, they say, oh, well, you're 30, so we don't want to get a long-term deal.
You can't
have it both ways.
I hate the MLB system of pay. Because the problem – here's the reality – is that Aaron Judge will be worth – every penny that the Yankees or somebody else pays him for like the next 5 years. And then you know what's going to happen in the last 5 years of the deal, or maybe the last three years of the deal, if everything goes well. He's going to be looked at in the same way that we looked at the Albert Pujols contract at the end of his tenure with the Angels, right? I mean, it's going to be...
He'll be chasing records.
Chasing records, but looking like a husk of him old of his old self, right?
Right.
And that's, by the way... That is
like
nothing
A-Rod
to do.
As well.
That's not an indictment on Aaron Judge. It's an indictment on the system. I hate the way it's set up. I know MLB will never change it, but I do think that there is benefit for both sides to looking into modifications, because if you're the owners, if you're going to shell out $400 million for a guy, wouldn't you rather do it from like the ages of like 23 to 33 as opposed to 30 to 40? It just seems to me like much better business. It feels like the only way that we can end the show here, Bart, is to just put a pin in the conversation we've had on the possibility of Kevin Durant being traded to the Boston Celtics. Jaylen Brown would be the centerpiece of a package going back to the Brooklyn Nets. And if you are Brad Stevens calling the shots for the Celtics, you're saying, I'm all in.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think, listen, we know that something has to happen. And the longer you wait, if you're the Celtics, the more competition and the bigger the packages are going to go for Kevin Durant, because all they did was bring attention to the fact that they're willing to give up a star, and other people have to look at their secondary stars and say, you know what? Kevin Durant makes us better. And if I'm a general manager or a head coach, I can't worry about what happens year five when Kevin Durant leaves, because I won't be here anyway if I don't win a championship. But if I win a championship, I'll be able to be here for a lot longer than the four years that Kevin Durant still has on his contract.
And by the way, if you're the Brooklyn Nets, you and I both agree that as far as centerpieces of a package goes, I'm taking Jaylen Brown and whatever else is involved 10 times out of 10, as opposed to Tyler Hero or Mikal Bridges as a centerpiece for Phoenix or Miami.
Exactly. There's levels to this, and not all basketball players are created equal. And as far as what we've been listening to, he's far and above better than any other package or any centerpiece that we've heard so far.
So Bart has been on the air for almost 5 hours straight right now.
Yes, son.
How do you recover from that? Like, are you going back home to like crush a protein smoothie shake, or what? What's happening next?
No. I'm trying to get my ticket so I can go to this Kevin Hart, Chris Rock concert.
You're telling me that Bart Scott can't get tickets to
No, I have it. I can't print it out from StubHub. They tell me I got to print it through Ticketmaster. So, like, the tech people have been trying to get my tickets for the betterment of the 3 hours that we've been on air.
Hey, well, you know, New Jersey, the state of New Jersey is mad at Ticketmaster right now. I'm not sure if you've been following that story, but Bruce Springsteen tickets are literally the most expensive thing in the world right now, other than perhaps gas.
Well, I saw Elton John yesterday. I was driving by going home, and he was at MetLife. Was crazy.
75 years old and still getting it done. Elton John is a performer in every sense of the
word.
Yeah,
he was jacked up on Mountain Dew, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt. It's been a blast being on here with you, Bart Scott. I appreciate you indulging me for a day. Alan will be back soon enough, that much I am sure. But coming up, it's Canty and Carlin with Courtney Cronin and Mike Wells. For Bart, I'm Field. We'll talk to you soon.
Chip, I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Bart and Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio, or stream the video of the show on ESPN+. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.